This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Jack Curry is my friend and my colleague at the YES Network, and he and Paul O'Neill have combined to write a book called Nine Innings of Baseball Taught Me, Swing and a Hit. And right now it is the number one baseball book on Amazon. So order yours now wherever you buy your books. And we bring on Jack Curry. Jack, how you doing? It's Michael, Don, and Peter.
I'm doing well, Michael, and I want to make Peter feel right at home by saying I'm going to quote Ice Cube right out of the gate. With you giving that Amazon information, it was a good day. We hope that we have some more good days this week.
Lakers beat the Supersonics.
That's right.
Mr.
That's
Ryan right. Scored a triple double.
Well, that's you know, and Jack, that's my issue with the song is how reasonable is it that Ice Cube was keeping track of his statistics of pickup basketball?
Well, let's not dig too deep into it, Peter. Let's just take that one lyric and that one moment and go with it.
Now, Jack, before we talk about the book, you know, in the previous segment, Nalo Weisig is on the IL with a shoulder issue. Chad Green, out for the year, Tommy John. Luis Gil, out for the year, Tommy John. Chapman, on the IL, tendonitis of the Achilles. Now, no one's going to throw any pity party for the Yankees, but how do they navigate this? They have four games coming up with the Tampa Bay Rays, who never really went away, even despite the Yankees' big start. They haven't gone away. So what do the Yankees do? How do they get these outs out of the bullpen?
It's a fantastic question. When I was at the stadium yesterday doing some pregame reporting for YES, Loaisiga was one of the pitchers we talked about, and I said he is someone who, going forward, you have to be able to rely on. The location has been an issue. I heard you address that earlier, Michael. So I thought that Loaisiga would be somebody who they could rely on, not somebody they were going to have to put on the IL. So Clark Schmidt suddenly becomes a very important factor. You mentioned Heal. That's someone who, in this spot, they would have been reaching down to the minor leagues to potentially bring him back up, but now he's gone because of Tommy John surgery. I think their depth is going to really be tested. And, Michael, I look at a guy like Sears pitching tonight. Normally, he would throw his 70-plus pitches or so tonight, and the Yankees would probably send him back down because he wouldn't be available for a few days. With what they have available in the minor leagues and who's on the 40-man roster right now, you might see Sears pitch tonight and stay with the team and become a bullpen option down the road.
Now, the other issue that they have that is not completely injury-related, although Gallo's been out with the COVID protocol, is Gallo and Hicks. And if they're going to continue in the direction that they're going, are they going to have to make a move? Can they go forward with Gallo and Hicks in the everyday lineup?
It's a great question, Don. And when you play as well as the Yankees have, you can camouflage some of the players who have struggled. But you just picked out two guys whose struggles have been hard to not notice. Hicks, especially lately. You look at that strikeout yesterday, and you could even see his reaction afterward. It's interesting because actually for the last couple of games, he had hit the ball with a little more authority, been a little more selective at the plate, worked in a couple of walks. The interesting thing about the graphic we're showing now, as bad as his offensive numbers have been, that's actually a respectable on-base percentage at about .350. But, Don, the Yankees are not the type of team who's going to pull the plug after 5 or 6 weeks. They go into the season with a blueprint. They believe in certain guys. And I think that they're going to give more of a leash to Gallo and more of a leash to Hicks, especially now with some of the injury issues that we're talking about, especially if Stanton happens to be down now. Where are you getting your outfield production from? A lot of folks have said, go to Florial, bring up Florial. Now, I know it's only been a couple of games right now, but Florial looks like a guy who still needs some seasoning and a guy who seems as if he's not catching up with pitches at the major league level. So the best remedy to the problem that you brought up, Don, is for Gallo and Hicks to perform at a higher level as opposed to trying to reach out and find a way to replace them.
Do you think the Donaldson thing could be an issue? I thought that both Aaron Boone and Aaron Judge handled it and spoke about it very well, Jack. But I think one of the strengths of the Yankees over the first 6 weeks of the season was how close they are. I mean, this is a team that's not 25 Cavs, 25 guys, or 26 Cavs now. They really do get along, and they hang out together, and they enjoy each other's company. Do you? I mean, it's just a guess. How do we know? But do you think this could be an issue?
What was the old Joe Girardi line? It's not what you want, right? And right. This is a more serious issue than that. And I think, Michael, the fact that the manager of the team and the face of the team, and you mentioned both of them, Aaron Boone and Aaron Judge, both said that they did not believe Donaldson should have said it. I think the message was sent throughout the clubhouse. You know Donaldson got that message because he heard it from Boone and he heard it from Judge. I do think that teams are resilient. I think we cover these stories intensely, as we should. And when you start talking about race, that is going to get even more intense coverage. I think teams figure out a way to get back on the field. And for those 3-plus hours, they're worried about winning a baseball game that night. And I even think when Judge talked about Donaldson, that's what he said. He brought up the fact that Donaldson had apologized, and Judge said, now it's time to get back to worrying about baseball.
And he's just had an amazing season, Jack, right? Think of the pressure of betting on himself and knowing how much is on the line. Are you taken aback by how great it's been, or is this what you kind of expect from Judge when he's healthy?
I will say this, Don. When he had one home run through the first 13 games and the Yankees were 7-6, a lot of people were saying he's distracted by those contract negotiations and he's not focusing. I didn't think that was the case because of this. Judge was the one who set the parameters. Judge was the one who said, if we can't agree to an extension by opening day, I don't want to talk anymore. So I don't think you're distracted by something when you have established the rules. Can you ever think that a guy would put up the numbers we're staring at right now? Those are some pretty major numbers. I mean, he's on pace to hit mid-60s in terms of home runs. But, Don, when you watch his approach and you watch the way that he's doing it, I'm not surprised because pitchers try to get him out in two ways. They try and bust him inside with fastballs, or they try and get him to chase away. But Aaron Boone made a great point yesterday. He said Judge has done a great job taking away pitchers' weapons. So we always talk about him being a power hitter. We should talk about his intelligence, too. If you go to the plate and you've already figured out a way to take a pitcher's best weapon away from him, suddenly that pitcher is much more vulnerable than he ever was. And let's face it, a large majority of pitchers are vulnerable the second that Aaron Judge steps in the batter's box.
Now I'm sorry, Michael.
Go, Pete.
Thank you. Jack, back to the judge of it all. We don't know how this thing's going to play out when we get to the offseason, but I mean, besides Jeter, who can you think of that the thought of losing him, when was the last time you remember a potential, such a devastating loss for the fan base if somehow they can't work it out with Aaron Judge?
Peter, I'll throw a Bernie Williams at you. There was a period when Bernie became a free agent where it looked as if he was going to the Red Sox. So he wasn't just leaving. He was going to go and play for the Red Sox. And Bernie, obviously Jeter surpassed Bernie in terms of his popularity and what he ended up doing as a Yankee. But Bernie was a linchpin Yankee. He was a very important player. And I remember how much drama there was surrounding that at the time. Judge, it would be at that level. Because if you're at Yankee Stadium and you look around the stands, what uniform jersey are these kids wearing? Number 99. Whose autograph do kids want? They want Aaron Judge's autograph. If Aaron Judge was a 250 hitter who hit 18 homers a season, you would still watch him at games because he's a giant. I mean, he's an aberration on a baseball field at 6'7", 280 pounds. But add in the fact that he's one of the most talented players in the game, now everyone is laser focused on him. I can't predict the future, but Peter, I just think that there's a way that both of these sides know they need each other, that this relationship is one that is going to continue beyond 2022. I have a hard time imagining Judge parting with the Yankees and the Yankees parting with him.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My Yes Network colleague, Jack Curry, is our guest. He has a book with Paul O'Neill out right now, Swing and a Hit, number one baseball book on Amazon. You know, when I dug into the book, I felt, okay, what am I going to learn about Paul O'Neill? I know this guy. I thought as well as anybody. I've been around him for all this time,
wow,
almost 30 years. But I did learn a lot. What jumped out at you? Because you know him as well as I do.
Michael, we all know about the passion, the intensity, the fire, the way that he played the game. But when you talked to Paul about some of his rituals and how he took those 0 for 5s home every night and how he would be in a hotel room in Cleveland and he was 0 for his last 12 and he's staring at the ceiling thinking that he was never going to get a hit again, I think revisiting some of those moments with Paul was just a reminder of how that passion might have burned at a higher flame than I even realized. And just his stubbornness. We all know he was stubborn and bashing the water coolers, fighting with umpires, but he was stubborn as a hitter. He wanted to do what he felt worked best for him. And that's why he ended up clashing with Lou Piniella in Cincinnati, because Lou Piniella had a way that he thought Paul should hit, and Paul had a way that he believed was most successful for him. And it was something that his father taught him when he was 5 years old. It was hit line drives. It was emulating a swing that was similar to Ted Williams' swing. And that's the hitter who Paul felt he needed to be. And that's the hitter who he was for the majority of his career. And he called it a revelation when he got to the Yankees, because Stick Michael, who was the GM at the time, said, "You remind me of Mattingly because you swing from the left side, you hit the ball to all fields. You can hit home runs, but you're not a home run hitter." And granted, every major league player goes to the plate. You want to hit a home run. That's the best thing that you can do. But Paul talks about in the book, even though he hit 300 career home runs, he never considered himself a home run hitter. He wanted to hit line drives. Hit line drives to all parts of the field, find the grass, hit a ball into the gap. I think the stubbornness and just the perfectionist he was as a hitter, Michael, that stood out to me too.
Was it just a pain in the rear, though, to talk to him constantly? And I mean, because he's not that easy to get a hold of. And, I mean, how did you do the interviews with him?
Michael, it was actually a pleasure, and I'm not just saying that for the radio and TV audience. Paul and I developed a rhythm, and I would usually text him and say, "What's your time look like this week? How much free time do you have on Tuesday?" Now, we did squeeze it in around a lot of golf, and I wasn't the one playing golf. I'm not a golfer. We squeezed it in around a lot of rounds of golf, but I made sure that when Paul and I spoke that those interviews were packed with questions. Those interviews were going to be substantive. I've got a job right here, the one that I do at the YES Network, so I didn't want to waste time either. So when we talked, we got right to the heart of the matter. And you read the book already, Michael, which I appreciate, and I appreciate you and everyone at YES who has allowed me to talk about it. I also made sure I spoke to all of his managers, Buck Showalter, Joe Torre, Lou Piniella, Pete Rose. How could I forget Pete Rose? Pete Rose was great, by the way, talking about Paul O'Neill. So I was able to make sure that those interviews backed up some of the things Paul said, or maybe contradicted some of the things he said, and then we would dig in on the next interview and get his side of things.
It's a great book. Go buy it. Paul O'Neill and Jack Curry, Swing and a Hit, 9 Innings of a Baseball Taught Me. And I've got to tell you, Peter and Don, you have to agree. Have you ever seen any of our guests have a better setup than Jack? I mean, he has his own studio, a picture of the book behind him. I don't think we've ever had a guest do this on TV. Oh. On radio, you're missing how beautiful it looks.
I got to say, I don't want to interview anybody else unless it's in these situations. I think every host has their own television studio. Every guest has to have one. Otherwise, I don't want to talk to them.
It's beautiful. Jack, you look tremendous. You really do. What a setup.
I appreciate that. And Don, you're setting the bar high. You're going to lose some guests. I mean, this is the YES Network. This is Anthony Greek. It's everybody out here making this place look fantastic. All I had to do was show up and put a microphone on my tie.
See, but Jack, what you don't understand, Don usually hates guests, so he wants to lose them.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. This is a win.
This is a win for him. Good luck with
the
book, Jack.
Hey, Michael, before I go, I do have to say to you, and I know you said you wanted to talk about this and then move on, I thought your opening comments, and all three of you guys, I thought what you had to say at the top of your show today was needed, and I enjoyed hearing it, and I hope that a lot of people were listening to it.
Thank you, my friend.
Jack.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you. That's Jack Curry. Go buy his book. It's a great book. It really is. I read it. I wouldn't tell you if I didn't think it was great. It's a great book, and you know, even more so if you're a Paul O'Neill fan, you'll just love it. 1-800-919-3776. Don, the Mets are really getting a butt kicking right now.
They scored a run, the Mets. They're
so
good.
It's 9-1 right now?
It's 9-1, yes.
And Zapuki gave up four home runs,
Zapuki,
and was out in the second inning.
The girl that's hard to get. Zapuki, the girl that's all I'm thinking about right now is in my head, because certainly good pitching isn't.
Wow. We'll be back with more of this brilliance right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.